Sean, this is why we have the catheters.
I love those.
Oh, we didn't do lion face, lemon face. Oh my god.
Lion face.
Sean? Lemon face.
Lion face. Lemon face. One more. Lion face.
Lion.
Lemon face.
I'm sort of pantomiming it because if I open my mouth too wide, blood will gush out of it from the hole that used to be my teeth. My tooth. Yeah, and for what it's worth, guys, I'm going to do what I can to just sort of stay in the back as much as possible because if I talk too much, it actually hurts. So it's funny. When I suggested last Friday, I was like, oh, well, I have to record a podcast. My dentist looked at me like, oh, well, how long is it? Does it last? I'm like, at least 1 hour. He's like, he gave me both eyebrows up and was like, I don't know if that's a good idea.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. All right, so I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Sean Watson.
And we are Commander In.
Commander In.
Now there's some fancy music playing right now. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, or Hearthstone. Will we, gentlemen? We've gotten that out of our system this week.
Sure.
Yeah.
So remember to head over to join our Patreon community at patreon.com/commanderandmtg. By donating as little as a dollar a show, you'll get to be part of determining what questions we ask our guests, like our fancy guest this week. And at some point, we're going to ask our patrons to help us decide which older sets we review and in what order. And of course, now we'll talk about it a little bit later. We have a July contest coming up. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to talk about one of our favorite tools, edhrec.com, a site, as I said, a tool that digests and presents information about the overall commander meta. But to make sure we covered all the bases, we brought an alleged expert on edhrec.com on the show, none other than the supreme number cruncher, the master data aggregator, who has been wrecking it for some time now, Donald Miner. Howdy, Donald.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's okay to laugh at any time. It makes us feel like we're doing something.
I can't say I've ever gotten that intro before, so.
That's right. Well, welcome to the show. This is a wonderful pleasure to have you on. I've wanted to talk, actually, all three of us have wanted to talk to you on the show since we started it, because we've been using EDHREC for that long and longer.
Yeah, well, I've been using it probably the longest, so.
Yeah, genuinely, when we started planning this show, we made a list of people we'd like to get on, and your name was right at the top of that list, Donald.
Thanks.
Yeah, so that gives you an idea of how long we've wanted to have you on the show, and we basically are just lazy sots, is what it comes down to. So not all of our listeners know who you are and what you do, so would you mind giving us a couple of minutes introduction?
Sure. So my name is Donald Miner, and I've been working on EDHREC. I started it, and I've been working on it by myself for a while. Recently, I got some help. But yeah, I've been a long-term Magic player recently, time passes differently in Magic, I guess. So recently, I probably mean the past 5 or 6 years, I've been playing EDH almost primarily. So yeah, I don't know, what else you want to know?
why did you, and maybe we'll get into a little bit more detail on this later, but why did you start EDH?
I was basically just an EDH player, and I kind of saw a need for something in particular, like, I don't know, I could talk about this for a long time about how we started it, but...
We'll just ring a gong if you go too long.
All right, all right, all right. So I started because I was getting tired of, when I was building a new deck, I was getting tired of going through like countless deck lists and picking out the cards that I liked from the different deck lists and putting in some text file and then finally putting it together. And I felt like I kept doing the same thing over and over again. And as a computer programmer, when you start seeing yourself doing the same thing over and over again, you kind of get the itch to automate it. So that's what I did. And you know, I downloaded a bunch of decks from it was like something like 4,000 decks from a website, probably against their will. And it was basically just a terminal script that was running on my laptop for a good couple months, and I was just using it privately, and I showed it to a couple of my friends, and they were like, well, I mean, that's pretty cool. So yeah, it kind of spun out from there, and it was running as a Reddit bot for a while because I was too lazy to make a website, and that's why it was started as a Reddit bot, was because writing Reddit comments is a lot easier than writing a website.
Huh.
Yeah, and then it got more popular, made a website, it got more popular, we've rewritten it a couple times. And it's kind of gotten way crazier than I thought it would be from a number of users' perspective and how popular it's become. So it's been kind of humbling and fun at the same time.
Well, you wrote an excellent tool.
Yeah, well, I wasn't, like, trying to. You know, I kind of felt like it was useful. And sometimes I kind of catch myself. It's kind of weird. I'm sitting there using my own website, and I kind of forget that I built it myself, especially if I haven't worked on it in a while. Like, I'll kind of go through maybe a couple of months where I don't have time to work on it, and you know, realize, oh, wow, I actually wrote this thing, and I use it myself. So I guess I'm my own user, which has been fun.
Yeah, that's great. You ever find yourself cursing the people who wrote it? And then, oh.
Yeah. I think maybe a couple times I've been kind of irritated by something maybe, and like, whatever, I'm just not gonna. And then I think about how to fix it, and I'm just, it's, I don't know, maybe I complain less about certain things than maybe some people do. Probably the number one complaint I get is the fact that banned cards show up. It's just too much work. So, it will be fixed soon, though, I promise.
Any deck which has Simic colors in it, I just presume there'll be a Prophet of Kruphix on the list and move along.
Yeah.
I can live with that. Yeah.
So if you want to relive the old days, you go over and pull a Simic deck and there's your Prophet.
Is there any way, Donald, you can just tag a banned card so it still appears, but yep, players who are brewing can go, oh yeah, it's banned, if it might be someone that doesn't read the ban list or is new to the format.
That's exactly what we're going to do. And actually is...
Yay!
Yeah, so actually that should be there. So we have the beta up of the next version, and before that is no longer a beta, it will have the ban list integrated in it. So that's on the to-do list before we go live.
Ah, so, that's excellent.
So the number one feature request will be added.
So still not filtering, but flagged.
Yeah, well, one nuance is that we have primarily the French ban list and the current commander ban list. So they have different ban lists, obviously. So, and there are a group of people that definitely a minority that use this for French commander. So I don't want to necessarily remove it entirely. And also two cards can get unbanned and rebanned and things like that. So I don't want to just like remove the decks or remove them entirely. I'm just going to leave it. And then it'll have like a nice big flag on it that says banned on it.
Oh, that's cool.
The other thing that we added as well in the beta is the Nephilim are up there. The main reason why I did that, to be honest, is because of the new four color commanders coming up in the new commander set. And I needed to make sure that it like fit correctly on the website and everything. So I figured, you know, I'll put the Nephilim on there, which has been a pretty popular request. And those are going to be flagged with, you know, like, we haven't quite come up with the term yet, but it'll be something like house rules or something like that, that will make it clear that it's not a legal commander. But we have it up there anyways.
Huh, that's great.
Yep.
All right. Well, this is just a teaser because we're going to get all up in EDH Rex Grill all right, a little bit later. But first, we have some news. Sean, you called this an ironic correction of the week, didn't you?
Yeah, this could teach Alanis Morissette a thing or two about the true meaning of irony.
Yes, we, now it's two episodes ago, did a watch list on the Sundial of the Infinite, in part because it is an incredibly confusing card. And guess what? We got continuous effect, so those things that end, or that say until the end of the turn, like giant growth and so forth, we got them wrong. Those effects actually do end with the Sundial's activation. They don't continue into your opponent's turn. So, sorry, everybody. We got that wrong. And since Nate is quietest so far this episode, it's his fault.
What?
No, that's entirely my fault. So, sorry, folks. It was dumb. Another piece of news. Oh, and remember that you can always send corrections and correction information. Actually, Lorcan sent us a long correction for Sundial, but we're not going to get into that right now. We're just going to say continuous effects end. But you can always send corrections to cast@commander@mtg.com. And complaints should be addressed to the Twitter address copain26, C-O-P-A-I-N-2-6. And it's perfectly okay to address that to Algernon or Nigel.
It doesn't have to be a magic complaint either. It can be about anything
right.
In life.
Yeah, any kind of life complaint, just address it to copain26. So, second bit of news. As you heard last week, we are hosting an Eternal Masters pack giveaway contest. Just as a recap, and we urge you to go back and listen to that episode so that you can be more familiar with the details, but we're giving away three packs of Eternal Masters to our non-patron listeners. So anybody can enter it. You get one entry per person. And again, there will be three winners of one pack each. You have to name all 32 cards in the packs that Logan and Jessica read correctly. In addition, we have a second contest where we are giving these packs, the rest of the packs of the box, away to our patrons. And again, they only have to name 30 cards correctly. They get a slightly easier contest. And if you do get those correctly, you're entered to win once per dollar donated to us in July. There are six winners of one pack each, three winners of three packs each, and one grand prize winner of six packs of Eternal Masters. How awesome is that?
That's an amazing prize. I want that. Can I enter?
I'm sorry, Sean. You cannot enter.
Boo.
It turns out that you're privy to some information that might make guessing these cards a little bit easier.
A bit suspicious.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, I won.
But other podcast hosts can enter. I don't mean hosts of this show. Other podcast hosts can enter. We've had questions about that. We've even tried to enter a couple of their contests, but we're opening it up to everybody.
Yeah, that package of $40 I sent over to Andy and Sean at Commander's Brew never gets me.
Wow.
The message was saying, Sean, stop sending us money. The prizes are worth less than you send us, but, you know.
That's right, because you keep sending them pounds, and as we know, that's pretty much in free fall.
Oh, God. Oh,
no politics.
Cards cost more money now for me than they did a week ago, and that's true, because we have to, you know, import cards.
Yeah. So you lost, in a traditional capitalist fashion, your currency lost 10% of its value, but the cards all went up by 15%.
Yeah, pretty much. Just in England, I was already paying pound to dollar anyway, so if a card was $10, I was pretty much paying £10. I might get it for £9 occasionally. But now it's just gone ridiculous.
Well, if the pound falls low enough, you can start using your magic cards as the new currency.
It's true. They look more likely to retain their value than the pound at the moment. Yeah. So, yes. Oh.
It's like the new gold.
Oh, God, I hate Europe. And I hate it because I love it. But, you know, anyway.
In other news, we have the most wonderful patrons, because once again, Mason Talley made a suggestion that we just leapt on. And he suggested we create on Facebook a deck review group where our listeners can submit a deck for review by one of the ninjas in our deck testing group and our humble hosts and Sean. Sean not being humble. And so that's on Facebook. We'll include the link in the show notes. But if you can't wait to look at the show notes, it's Commander in Deck Reviews on Facebook.com. To join the group, all you have to do is submit a deck for review, follow the rules that Mason has posted as a PDF, and Mason will have two decks going in review at any one time. We might expand that if we get overwhelmed, and we'll see about that. To stay in the group, you have to submit comments on decks that are being reviewed, so it's just like a writer's workshop, where the people who show up have to contribute something for review and in turn review somebody else's work. Mason is the administrator, and we will be quite draconian. We will be almost British in our draconianness about enforcing the rules, because if it's like the email we receive, we'll soon be overwhelmed by your deck review requests. Ah. And finally, Eldritch Moon spoilers. It's been an awesome week so far. A little peek behind the scenes. We're recording this on Wednesday. Our next episode, we're going to have a lot more in-depth review of cards. We may mention a couple this episode because we can't help ourselves. And next week, we'll have a special guest from Wizards of the Coast, somebody who has not yet been on the show. So we'll welcome that person. And we'll talk about a lot of the shenanigans in R&D related to Eldritch Moon.
Phil, a thought has just crossed my mind about Eldritch Moon. So if you combine Gisela and Bruna, what do you get?
Gisuna.
You get Brizella.
Sorry.
But Phil, I've had a realization of what's going on in the world. Oh. Or what will happen. If you combine Nate and Sean, you get Norn.
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
Let the grand completion commence.
Ah, yes. Yeah, well, I look forward to that magic card. If any of our listeners want to do a little preview by creating a melded Nate and Sean card, we would be happy to retweet it. Otherwise, use it to get under my fingernails, as it were. All right.
It will finally be the Eldrazi Phyrexian you've been wanting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, I thought that's what was going to happen this set, but
I was hoping for a Phyrexian guild gate.
Yes.
All right. So we have a couple of minor topics, and we'll try to get to the main topic, EDH Rec, as quickly as possible. But Donald, we're going to want to hear from you too. So Nate, what have you been playtesting? You have a really special playtesting experience, or even playing experience, don't you?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I visited the San Francisco branch of the Lady Planeswalker Society, and they had a commander night. Note about the Lady Planeswalker Society, you don't have to be a lady to play. It just means that there will be ladies present. So, don't be a chauvinist jerk. If you are one, they probably won't let you in or invite you back. And if you happen to own playmats or card sleeves featuring anime cleavage, maybe you should try not owning those.
Yeah, I feel bad because when I was at 2014 San Diego Comic-Con, I stumbled onto Steve Argyle's booth, and what made me stop and stare was this beautiful picture of what was the picture was titled The Sea King, I think, and it's of a wonderful woman who kind of dissolves into squid tentacles on the bottom, but she's of course naked without any mammary glands, without any nipples, but she's of course mostly naked. But now I don't play it because I'm fully aware of how uncomfortable it makes people. So
I think you should just. Do any of the Lady Planeswalker Societies have a playmat they keep just for when someone brings one of those that's just like a super buff anime dude with hulking, pumping muscles and maybe some genitals on show? They just whip out and say, do you enjoy looking at this all evening? Do you? Do you? Do you?
Just have a bunch of enthralling victors and throw them out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always forget about that card.
Yeah, it's awesome. How was it? What did you play?
Oh, I played Yaleva, and I got a good Rise of the Dark Realms out, but then I made a mistake because one of the creatures that came back was a Juniper Order Ranger. So I figured, hey, I'll put that out first, and then everything I have has a counter on it, right?
Uh-huh.
But then I forgot, hey, this guy over here has an Experiment Kradge, and among the creatures, among the entire playmat full of creatures, there's an infinite combo in there that lets him take all my creatures back, so, yeah.
Oops.
I was playing Listener AZ recently, and he Rises the Dark Round in his Black-Red Kolaghan Dragons Tribal deck. He's forgetting that he had his own World Gorger Dragon inside his graveyard.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Certain cards you don't run if you're running Rise of the Dark Realms in your own deck.
Yeah.
Phage is another one.
Well, that's very cool. Did anybody know that you were a member of the Commander in Hosts?
No, I don't think there were podcast listeners there at the time.
Okay. Well, awesome. Are you going to go back?
Yeah, if they have another Commander Night. It's at Borderlands Bookstore. It's a few blocks away. Charles Stross is coming for a book signing.
Hmm. Well, that's cool. I guess you'll be going back to the Borderlands. Borderlands?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right. Now, Donald, your EDH night is typically Thursday, and so for you, that's a little bit later today, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yep, about 9 hours from now.
What are you... Really?
Oh, I'm not, sorry.
You start...
Oh, no, it's... I'm sorry. 21 hours from now. I'm looking at the time. I was like, oh, it's only 1 p.m. No, it's actually 1 a.m.
Yes. There are certain tells that the world gives us that can lead us to
it all blends
set
together.
Ourselves in time.
Yeah, yeah. So sort of nights, Thursday nights.
So what are you going to be playing?
The two decks I've been playing the most are Mono Black Sidisi and Kozilek, are the two decks I've been playing the most lately.
Hmm. Which Kozilek?
The Great Distortion.
Got it.
Yep. So I've been having fun with those, but actually, both of them are, I think, pretty close to done. Like, I don't have too many changes that I've been making week to week recently. And I've been mostly testing out and playing with a Safi Eric's Daughter deck that I'm not sure is going to make it another week, but we'll see. Basically, I've been goldfishing a lot because it, like, accidentally combos a lot. You'll have, like, a bunch of cards on the board, and then you're like, I think this is a combo, and then it ends up being, like, a six-card chain that, you know, for two mana or whatever, can destroy a permanent. And so it's just like, oops, I comboed, and then it takes a long time to play the combo out. So I think, I don't know. I'm not sure if my friends like it very much.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, are you the type who assembles a deck and just keeps it, even if you don't play it every week, you just kind of keep it aside and then build a new one? Or are you constantly building and dissolving decks that are on the periphery?
Yeah, so I have a pretty strict rule with myself, and I have a certain number of decks that I'm willing to keep at any one time. So right now I'm at 4. I was at 3 for a really long time, and I was at 2 before that. And it's about every year maybe I add one to my quota. But basically, since I have 4 decks currently, if I, you know, for myself, if I want to build a new deck or new commander, just me, I have to choose which one I'm going to tear apart. Hmm. And it keeps my cards organized, and I also like optimized decks, kind of why I built the website to begin with. So I like to really max out a deck and pick kind of like a suboptimal commander and then max it out. So that's kind of what I've been doing. So I guess if I have too many decks, then I only have so many mana crypts. And
So you limit it to the number of mana crypts you own at any given time?
No, I only have 2 mana crypts. So there's 2 decks without mana crypts. But if I go too many, then I start running out of dual lands and. Yeah, it's just, you know, I just can't handle it. And usually the 4 decks, I also don't like them to overlap in purpose, so I won't have like 2 reanimator decks or two decks that kind of do the same thing. Usually I like to have diversity in both what they do and also to the competitiveness level. So I like to have a good variety in the four. It makes it fun for me to really think about, like, oh, this deck kind of replaces this deck's spot in the four, I guess. And they all fit in one box too, which is nice.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So I conducted a bit of an experiment knowing we were having you on, Donald. I created a card pool using... I picked a commander I've always wanted to brew. Just looked at every card that was suggested. So no one's specific deck, just everything that had come up as signature cards and top cards off EDH Rec. And used it as almost like a limited pool to build the deck. Yeah. So I built Sidri Galvanic Genius. And it's dirty filthy. It's so good. I've played 10 times of it and only lost twice.
Nice.
And one of those times was to mana screwing myself because some mean person destroyed all my mana rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a really interesting way of limiting yourself to play using EDH Rec. So you'll get a really good pool of, you know, 150, 200 cards. That's including land. But yeah, it's been super fun. And Sidri's great. And I papered it out. I enjoyed playing with it so much.
Yeah, that was how I learned how Muzio works. I just went up to EDH Rec and I had it generate a deck list for me.
Yeah.
And I played it even with the Phyrexian cards in there. And then after a while, once I understood what he did, then I pulled out all the Phyrexian cards and put in clean cards.
Yeah, I actually do that a lot. That's actually why that feature exists of generating the deck list, is because what I like to do is I have a problem in that I have like fear of building a deck and then it sucking because, you know, pulling all the cards and like sleeving them and stuff. It's, you know, even if I know what cards I want to pull, it's still going to take me a few hours. And by pulling the deck list down, I usually like goldfish it a few times on Tapped Out and see if like, does this feel good? Like, do I think I can get behind this deck? And then I think I've saved a lot of time because, you know, I go into building decks probably knowing that I'm going to like it before it's actually built.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a commander that you have tried to brew several times? It can't get it working. You keep coming back to? Because I do. Glitter the Traitor, can't get her to tick.
Yeah, there's a few. So there's one in particular is Lord of Tressorhorn. So the reason why I like him a lot, he was probably my favorite card back when I was playing those days. And I always had some sort of janky Lord of Tressorhorn deck. And I built it a couple times in a couple different ways. And I don't know, it just never makes it more than a few weeks. Either it's too linear or it's not very good. So I think he's probably the one that comes to mind, you know, when you mention that. The other one, maybe not necessarily Commander in particular, but Simic in general. Blue-green is like a combo that I liked a lot outside of Commander, and I haven't been able to ever find a deck that I really liked in Simic. So I think that those are two that come to mind.
What kind of player do you style yourself?
I definitely like control. I was a control player in Standard and other formats before I started playing Commander. And so I definitely like control type games where I have like a lot of answers to things that are going on. Maybe I'm a little bit more reactive of a player than a proactive one. And that tends to work out pretty well because I think my play group is pretty proactive. So usually I'm the only one playing blue on the table, and people joke that, you know, I kind of playing the police of the table because otherwise it's just like an all out brawl. So I think my signature card that my friends always say is like, oh, look, he has 6 mana open. He's going to capsize buyback. So. So
we ought to introduce you to A.E. Marling.
Yeah. Is he like that, I guess, as well?
Oh, he plays a brutal mono blue deck.
Nice.
It's a sea monsters deck, and it's easy to kind of just go, oh, sea monsters, because of course you think of sea serpent and other big lunks like that, but it stopped us cold. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so my Tanawa deck I've had be like, it's gone through a different couple of iterations, but that one's been pretty brutal too. And I've had it go between more casual, and right now it's pretty like janky. But I've had it at a point where it was a little bit more competitive. But I've actually been trying to get away. Like, I kind of got sick of Blue a little bit because I was playing it so much. And so I've been kind of taking it upon myself to build control decks without Blue in it, which is how I came across Sidisi. And so basically that's like a mono-black control deck. And then Kozilek also is, I think, that deck is just kind of weird in general, but it definitely plays, I think, like a control deck.
I have a great distortion deck, and you really need to sort of spread the mana and to abuse his counterspell ability.
Yep.
It does feel nice to know that when you start getting low in cards, you can just cast a command and refill your hand.
Yeah, like I think also too, one thing in general with my EDH decks that I like is I don't like decks that are too revolved around the commander, where it's like the line of play is pretty obvious, and that's why I like cards like Sidisi and. Both Sidisi's actually, I think, are good examples of it. And then Kozilek, because Kozilek is just more synergistic with a bunch of mana rocks. It's not really like, you know, I'm trying to build a deck around Kozilek. It's more that he just fits in really nicely and he has synergy. So that's why it's the kind of deck that I like.
That's cool. So speaking of commanders, we build a deck around. Nate, you want to intro this?
Our next segment is the watch list.
The watch list. Da, da,
da. So this is where we talk about cards that affect the meta. Their importance becomes so extraordinary and focusing that the meta just can't avoid it. The watch list. And this week, Donald has suggested we talk about Marin of Clan Nel'Toth.
Bravo.
Yep. I think somebody needs to talk about it.
I agree.
Now, is Marin a card that we have to watch out for because it's very powerful and ban-worthy, or is there another reason?
You know, I think I don't think it's ban-worthy. Just from a, I don't know if this is a right-wing EDH perspective or a left-wing one, but, you know, I think the ban list in general is too conservative. But Marin is not ban-worthy, but I think, you know, actually, it's quite popular, which makes me not want to play it, but it's actually quite a fun commander, I think. I think they did a good job on making it pretty fun, and it's a archetype that people want to play, and it's good enough to be, like, close to top tier, if not top tier. So I think it has, like, a good mix of both being fun and competitive that makes it really popular. So, you know, when I think about what cards shape the meta, I think Marin does, because its popularity and me seeing it a lot when I go play in public, you know, I'm pretty much putting graveyard hate in just about every deck now. I think it was a good idea before Marin, but now it's just like, you know, when I see a Marin deck come out like almost every other game, it's like, okay, yeah, I'm playing graveyard hate just about in every single deck that I have. So, yeah.
So, Marin, I built Marin when the decks first came out.
Yep.
Because there wasn't a Dimir pre-constructed, and I tried the Orzhov one, and Karlov was fine, but then Ailey came out in Over the Gatewatch and fixed my problems with Karlov. But so I built Marin when we were all playing with the pre-cons, and then I thought she was really easy to build.
Yeah,
like you didn't need to be a particularly nuanced deck builder to be able to get a very powerful deck out of her. And I like the fact that she made cards like Spore Frog entertaining. Or at least entertaining for you. And then I play in a paper meta. I play lots of different people online all the time. And I think I might have gone for a month where I didn't play a single game where somebody wasn't running Marin.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include my Marin deck in that, before people say, yeah, of course, you were using it, Sean. And I was just so sick to death of seeing her. And she fitted for me, or still does fit for me, into a category of commander that solve what their color is trying to do, or what their color combination is trying to do.
Yeah.
So Mizzix is another good example from the same precon block. Does what the Is it color pie slice is trying to do so well, why play with anything else? I think another example would be for myself, Gisela in Boros.
I mean, I think Boros still needs something, but
yeah. At the moment, it comes down to why play anything other than Gisela.
I hear.
There'll be people out there that like Tajik and things like that.
No, I agree.
Who are also legitimate, but they're just sort of weak. It's like Xur the Enchanter is just kind of a weak version of Narset.
Yep. I did a brief analysis to look at the growth of decks in black-green in particular. And, you know, it's not really super statistically significant, so, you know, I kind of hesitate to say that this is definitely happening, but after Moren was released, there were definitely less Jared decks and less, like, the other black-green kind of...
Glissa.
Yeah, like Glissa, like... There was still, like, Nath of Guiltleaf, which is, you know, a different playstyle, or Skullbriar, right? Yep. So those didn't really drop off, but, like, Jared in particular, like, why... I mean, unless you had some reason to, you know, I'm not sure why you would.
I'd be interested to see if Meren has affected Karador, which to me was always a Golgari deck which happened to have white in it.
Hmm. If you're still interested at the end of the podcast, I can go look up the... look at the data and let you know.
Sure, and we'll post those results on in our show notes when the episode drops.
Yeah, sure.
Now, the current most popular commander on EDH Rec, it's so weird to say that because you're here now. We actually our record, our high watermark for EDH records is something like 37 mentions in one-hour episode. Yeah. We're hoping to beat that this episode. So. It's the current most popular commander is Oloro.
Yes.
Does Meren threaten Oloro's position on the throne?
Yeah. So if it doesn't slow down, I've been trying to figure out this answer for myself recently. If it doesn't slow down, which it has actually slowed down since I started watching it more closely, I think Meren might outpace it sometime in the fall, maybe. If things don't change. So people might get bored of it, maybe. I'm still not sure who all the people are that are building Loro decks, but...
I have a theory on that.
So, I think the comparison goes more than just the popularity or on the website. I think they both kind of feel the same in that there's a lot of parallels between the two because they both have kind of like flexible... It's not like a Nekuzar who's like basically 95 of the 99 cards are picked for you already. Mm-hmm. Like Meren and Oloro, they allow different lines of play. They're kind of easy to play. They're got good abilities. They're pre-con, so they were easily accessible. And so I think that the parallels there, I think are great. And I think Meren, you know, may overcome Oloro eventually, but there's still like a lot of like Oloro is still typically, unless a new set's been released, like still always in the top 10 for a week by week. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Hmm. And so you're saying it's slowing down?
Yeah. So like, for example, if you look at this week's, at the time that we're talking right now, there have been 49 Meren decks that were built in the past week and 46 Oloro decks. So Meren was only edging out by 5 this week, where a couple weeks ago, Meren was like almost 20 decks above Oloro. So I don't know if it's just a bad week for Meren or a good week for Oloro. But like if you look at the month stats, you get 153 Meren decks and 102 Oloro decks. So over the past month, Meren has edged out over Oloro by 50 decks.
Wow.
Which is crazy because Meren's not been out for very long. It's only 200 and some decks behind. So if it keeps edging out 50 a month, you know, it'll only be 4 or 5 months before it overtakes it.
Right.
So I think in particular, the reason why I'm watching it is because like the other commanders that are near the top of popularity, like Nekuzar and Narset, Narset is kind of different in why it's popular, I think, than the others.
Who's building Narset? I mean, people with no friends.
Yeah,
I could beat you all, even though no one will play me. I could beat.
So,
you
so
all.
I have a theory about these things. I think Narset is popular to people that are new to Commander that are playing like maybe Standard or something. That's my personal kind of theory because it has a line of play that I think is really attractive and powerful, and then you just realize this thing is really super boring. I mean, like Narset was something I was really excited for when it got spoiled, and then I built it, and it was just kind of like, wow, I either won the game or I didn't win the game, and there wasn't really anything that anybody could really do anything about.
There wasn't a game.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, sometimes this happens, and if I don't win, then the rest of the people have a game, kind of, and then, yeah. So anyways, it got taken apart the first night for me.
I did exactly the same. I built Narset for an evening, played precisely one game of it, and went...
Nope.
I'm going to look into my crystal ball here and go, yeah, this is... I've now seen everything this deck can do.
Yeah.
Although, interestingly, I built a Narset killer deck just to kill Narset.
Right, there you go. Yeah, I mean, we need to make him a Marenn killer deck.
Narset, of course, is our most busted commander. Sorry, we had a bracket with the 16 most busted commanders as determined by our patrons and our deck testing group, and of course us, and submitted that to a vote of our Twitter followers, and they chose Narset as the most busted commander.
Yeah, I mean, I think the popularity speaks for that. So, because like Alora and Ekizar, which are the number one and number two, they're not really busted in themselves. It's more just like the kind of deck. The deck itself is busted. Like, meanwhile, Narset by itself is busted, right?
Yeah, all by herself.
Yeah.
I don't think the Alora deck is busted. I think its appeal comes from it's in a really popular color shard.
Yep.
People like Esper, both mechanically and sort of image-wise, Esper's very appealing.
Yeah.
And he's a commander that works even when you don't have to cast him, and you can kind of build any Esper strategy and just whack Alora on there as your commander and get benefit out of it. And he was a pre-card.
Yeah, and yeah. I think there's just a lack of good stuff commanders in Esper, I think, is the main one. Like, a lot of the other Esper commanders are pretty, support a line of play, like Sidri is artifacts, and, like Shroom is artifacts. I think...
Centriplets can be good stuff, but people tend to hate her off the table.
Yeah, I had that deck for a little bit, and then they my opponents just started killing it just because they were annoyed by it, not because it was good. And yeah. So like in my playgroup, for example, Alora was pretty good because I think it's pretty rare in my playgroup to die to commander damage. It's like pretty I don't know what it is about like the meta between the four players that we have, but it pretty much never happens. So life gain, I think, in my meta is maybe better than the public. So I think maybe that's something to keep. Because basically, if you're at like 80, 90 life or whatever, there's just some decks that are never going to catch up to that. So
that's why commander damage exists, right?
Yeah, yeah. The game has to end at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, to me, that's why Magister Sphinx and Sorin Markov exist. But,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or the new tree.
Yeah, the new tree looks very good.
Yeah.
All right, so that is Marin, isn't it? Nate, anything you want to add to close this up?
If you're bored of good stuff, Golgari Marin, try Shaman Curse Tribal.
Nice.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, so we have an alleged expert on EDHREC.com here. Donald, we have a question from our patron, Bradford Heron. He wants to know, he has a couple of questions for you. And one is, what are your thoughts on competitive commander? Like, your thoughts, not as supported by EDHREC.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with it. I personally am a competitive player. And the way that I curb that is by picking... The way I've typically have prevented myself from becoming too... degenerate and like things like Narset are just not fun is I'll pick like a suboptimal commander and then try to make that as competitive as possible. So like, you know, the couple decks I've talked about, like my Kozilek Grand Distortion deck, I think is probably definitely on the competitive side to what that deck can be, but it's still not going to be as degenerate as like as a Derevi or a Narset. So that's how I kind of hold myself back. But the one thing I really like about my meta with the four guys that play is that nobody ever really gets salty about anything. Like if somebody, you know, wins with a combo kind of early on, you know, it's like, great, let's shuffle up and we get another game in. You know, I'm definitely more careful in public, but yeah, you know, I'm personally okay with it, but at the same time, I don't like I don't have any conflict with players that are not less competitive, I guess. Like, and I personally am sure that I have a deck around that is more fun in that kind of environment. So,
yeah.
So I think, you know, I'm definitely competitive, but I don't really care like how Commander should be being played. And I build my decks accordingly so that I fit in more places.
Yeah.
And when we playtested in the past, I brought up my Tanoa deck opposed to my other decks because usually when I am playing with a new group, like I'll lead with my kind of my casual janky deck so that, you know, I don't offend anybody while I'm getting like a sense of what the players are doing.
Right.
Is there anything that from a competitive edge just you find intolerable? Like the one that always gets me is a 2-card infinite combo.
Yeah.
Where one of the 2 cards is the commander. The best example from recent memory is Azuri, Sage of Hours. Look, I take infinite turns.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, great, you've happened to draw into Sage of Hours if you haven't found it some other way with a green shooter spell. Well done, you win.
Yeah. You know what? I think I'm generally okay with that because like the way we handle it, I think, is that it kind of forces us to build decks that can handle that a little bit better. So, for example, when I'm tuning a deck for my particular meta, because that kind of thing does happen, I think we skew our decks to have more spot removal than I think we probably should have if I was building a deck for the masses, right? So I guess my personal playgroup, we kind of have fun like treating these things as puzzles almost. Like somebody will bring a new deck in and it has some super like degenerate thing that we can't deal with, and then everybody then brings out a new deck, it's like, and then that other deck gets crushed, and then it's like the circle of life, right?
Yeah.
However, you know, when I'm in public, I think I agree with that. You know, I try to avoid it. Like in my Sidisi deck, I may not even tutor the win that I have on the board just because I'm enjoying the game that I'm playing. And people don't know because, you know, why would I tutor for the combo if I may not have it, right?
So in my paper mail, we dealt with it in 2 ways. One, if someone did that, so the big criminal in this one was Niv-Mizzet with like Curiosity sure, or Ophidian's Eye.
Yeah, yep.
So if someone did that, we just said to them, we were enjoying the game, we'd say, excellent, you win. We're going to continue playing Magic. Go make a cup of tea.
Yeah.
The other thing I did was I built a Mikaos the Unhallowed deck that its entire purpose was to just tutor for Triskelion and go, there you go. Was that as much fun for you as it was for me? You know.
Yeah. I think also too, since, you know, if I take that line of play, right? You know, I think in general, like that line of play is more disruptible than a more resilient, like for example, my Sidisi deck usually wins with some sort of combo, but for the most part, I'm mostly just trying to control the game and be a resilient deck. And I think that's the kind of decks that I'm trying to build, is like, I'm trying to build like resilient decks that will win a long drawn out game and not necessarily like speed to getting Triskelion out. And I think those are better decks anyways, I think.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. See, in our online play group, I found we've got some new people in that like to play combo more. And that's, if you're listening to this, guys, that's not a criticism. It's just a fact. So I've found myself tuning more and more spot removal and counterspell into my decks.
Yeah.
And if you get people playing super heavy 2-card infinites and you say that's okay, I just find it warps your meta to be really spiky, really fast. Yeah. And that's why, well, we playtest online, we generally have a rule of if you do an infinite combo that you can stop, you can do it 5 times in a player cycle. And if it is an infinite combo that you can't stop once it's started, you lose the game as soon as you activate it.
Nice. I think that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Well, like in my Sidisi deck, it's kind of weird. And because usually I'm winning with Mikaos Triskelion, which is kind of non-climatic, but you know, I don't see that as the win. I don't see the win as the combo. I see the win as the fact that they let me get to the point where I could tap for like 48 black mana in one turn, right? Like, that's the win, right? The fact that I was able to create so much mana. The combo is more just like, you know, tying it off, right? So I guess like what I'm saying is there's like a flavor of the combo. Like if the combo is just like pulled out of your ass, then that's less interesting. But if you had to work up to that point where I was able to tap for 48 mana, obviously I'm going to do something broken with that.
I agree 100%. Yeah. But sort of how do you monitor that? You know, one person's degenerate is another person's perfectly acceptable,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
And degenerates are not a word we use on this show very much, for good reason.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a, because it's such a hard to define
yeah,
word.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's, I don't have fun, honestly, making a deck that's so competitive that has a, because I think the more competitive you get, the more focused I want to make the deck. So in a lot of senses, like the Kozilek deck is one of my favorite decks right now because it's not competitive, but it's still good. You know, I don't feel like I'm bad. But you know, I'm impacting the game. I'm doing good things, and you know, I'm working towards winning. So that's why I've in general have picked like the suboptimal commander. Like if I built a Derevi deck or like a Carador deck, which I you know have in the past, they're just completely and utterly degenerate, and they're not fun. You know, for me to play either. And I have much more fun if I pick something more janky as a commander, and then the 99 are pretty competitive.
Yeah. Bradford also wants to know, and you've talked about a couple of them, so I think I can guess at this, but he wants to know which is your all-time favorite commander to use.
I don't know. I can't say that I have one.
You have to choose one, baby. All the others are being swept away in the flood.
Man.
You're going to go into a Commander Hall of Fame, and your name is going to be forever put against this commander.
Oh, man. I actually saw this question ahead of time, and I didn't have an answer for it. You know, I think maybe I just don't get too tied to a commander. Yeah, I don't know. So if I had to say one, it would be... It's not... I'm doing kind of a cop-out, but it's kind of... It's Enchantress in general. So I've had a five-color Enchantress deck, which actually isn't built anymore right now, but I played that deck for like 7 years and plan on building it again in the future. And that deck, its commander, because it was five colors and there wasn't really a five-color Enchantress deck, has kind of changed over the years to different things based on how the deck changed. So,
especially after Theros.
Yeah, there's a decent amount of good stuff that came out in Theros. And yeah, I was kind of hoping for a five-color enchantment commander, but it didn't happen. So it was like Progenitus for a while, and then it became Scion, even if I had no dragons. And then, because actually I could shuffle my deck, which was sometimes relevant. And then finally ended with Sliver Queen. So yeah. So I'm not answering your question, I guess.
Well, now, one last chance, because Sean is actually pouring gasoline on all of your decks. And he's going to light them all on fire, but you can save one of them.
I've started to put the Union Jack up the flagpole. I'm going to sing the national anthem to sing them.
As Commander's Brew would say, we're going to put them into the barbecue, spray lighter fluid on all of them, and then see which one of them comes out from the ashes.
All right, I'll keep the Mono Black Citizen deck then.
All right. Now, if Mono Black Sidisi were a sandwich meat, what would it be?
Oh, man, I have no idea.
Yeah, Bradford, you're insane.
I'm trying to think of, like, tutor or, like, exploit.
I know what it is. It's spam because it could be literally anything.
That's a good one. All
right, I like that.
Yeah. And he did take us up on the offer to the $10 donators. He asked us to say periwinkle. So, there you go.
Periwinkle, well, that, not wankle.
Yes, but remember, you are the one who said they can choose how we pronounce it this episode. And he chose periwinkle. So... Donald, the show is a little bit silly sometimes.
Yeah, no, I like you guys a lot.
We like to play it very straight and narrow, but sometimes we are forced out of our ruts. All right. Nate, do you want to take this?
Hey, speaking of choosing your favorite baby, Tapped Out or Deck Stats?
Ooh,
we're gonna put both websites into the forget me machine, and it will be lost to the internet forever. And then the one you choose will emerge from the hoary mists.
Oh man,
we're also big fans of Commander's Brew. I don't know if that's clear.
Yeah, So I personally use Tapped Out, but I can't say that that's because... I think it's just because that's the one that I started using first. Like,
yeah! There's a difference in opinion between Tapped Out and Dextats between me and Mr. DeLuca.
Right.
So. Yeah. One
is better and the other is Tapped Out.
One is really pretty and is attractive to look at.
And the other is Tapped Out.
Yeah. There's definitely some pros and cons. I think the one thing that Dextats has over it is they have a specific integration with us on the EDH recommendations tab that if you're building an EDH deck. So, you know, they do have that integration that Tapped Out doesn't have, which is nice. So, I mean, I guess they kind of support us more. I'm not sure. But both websites, so... with both websites I have like relationships with and
so the
story goes I was scraping so when you plugged in a URL, you know, my program went and read the deck off of Tapped Out and eventually the Tapped Out guy banned my IP address and because I was like flooding his website, you know, I emailed him, I was like, hey, I'm really sorry, you know, what can I do? And he's like, oh, yeah, your website looks pretty cool. I'll unban the IP address. But I guess, like, you know, I've had to, because I pull so much data, especially at this point, from both of them, you know, we talk every now and then and making sure that I'm not doing anything that they don't want me to be doing. And I try to help them out by linking the decks back to their websites. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm big fans of both. And both guys that run the websites are really cool dudes. I think they're in similar situations as me where they just kind of like started working on something and kind of went out of control. So
you've never thought about producing your own sort of version of Tapped Out and Dextats then?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about it. I think in terms of a feature that I have written down that, you know, we'll see if I ever get to it or not, is like the ability to build the deck on my website, and not just because it would make it easier for me to get the data, but, you know, I think there would have to be some sort of compelling reason to do it. Like, maybe I provide recommendations as you're plugging cards in, I think was the main feature that I wanted to do. So if you start with a deck like 5 cards, and then maybe off to the side it says, oh, based on these 5 cards, you know, you have these cards, so that you can start clicking through instead of, like, typing the cards out. So there's, like, cool EDH rec things I can do to deck building that I think I'd want to do if I wanted to tackle that feature. But it's going to be a lot of work, so it's kind of perpetually pushed off.
And really, you have to offer something ultimately that's superior to what they offer.
Yeah.
And that's a tall order. I mean, we joke a lot, and, you know, in truth, we kind of exaggerate the differences a little bit. I think what both Tapped Out and Dextats are doing is wonderful for the community, and I'm just glad they exist. So
Yeah. Actually, you bring up a good point. Like, there's enough low-hanging fruit on EDHREC in terms of lists of other things that I could be working on that don't compete with anybody, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's hard to prioritize the deck building because the other places do exist and they're, you know, decent at it. So I think that's one of the reasons why I haven't gotten to it yet either.
I'm just imagining on your version a little sort of Clippy the paperclip. Hey, looks like you're building a Mariner Clan Nel'Toth deck, just like everyone else.
Yeah, I'll start shaming you for using certain cards. Like, it looks like you're trying to build an infinite combo. Would you like to not do that?
Well, which commander would you use as the avatar? I think Narset, because no one liked Clippy either.
Yeah, I think Narset probably. I was actually just thinking that. I was thinking it would either be Narset or Derevi. Because Derevi is kind of goofy, right? Like, it's kind of this like bird thing. And I've looked at the art for Derevi at a long time and kind of trying to figure out what the hell it is. But,
a sort of owl.
She's an owl thing, stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Derevi is going to be it because she's the goofiest of all the ones at the top here.
Many of our listeners think your site is cool.
Nice.
Patron Mason Talley asks, I currently use EDHREC as my main source for finding new tech that I may not know about. After that, I use it primarily to find new and interesting commanders/builds. My question, is there any one pet commander that you are always looking up to see what people are building?
Sort of like the F5 on a commander. What are they doing now? What are they doing now?
So I don't think there's anyone in particular that I've been tracking for a long period of time other than maybe Moren recently. But the one thing I do is I do press F5 a lot on new commanders as the new decks are getting submitted. That's really an interesting time to take a look at them, because I think it's interesting because people figure out what's working and what's not working, and they kind of change over time. So usually I'm looking at the new commanders from the most recent set and what they're doing, especially too, like how they shake out from popularity. There's been a couple surprises in recent history, like Oath of the Gatewatch. Like Mina and Den had more decks in it than I kind of expected, and people did some funny things with General Tazri that I wasn't expecting. So I guess my answer is I'd like to look at the commanders that have been printed in the recent set and see how they evolve.
Hmm.
Before they settled, like the sediment of deck building. Patron Hunter Pruitt asks, specifically, why EDH? And what stood out about the format that made you dedicate a whole website to building EDH decks?
I have kind of two answers to this question. One is I'm only an EDH player at the time that I built the website, so it was the only website that I would have cared to have built. The other thing, too, is that if you could go to the website right now, you can see like popularity by commander, popularity by card, by tribe, things like that. The original thing was just the deck recommendation. So when you plug your deck URL into the top right, that used to be the only thing the website did. And from a technology perspective, the algorithm that I'm using behind the scenes for that recommendation only works for single items, meaning the algorithm I'm using is used in like a lot of websites for like, if you go to Amazon, you buy some things and it recommends other things that they don't handle quantities of things very well. So like, I can't tell you that you should use two of one thing or four of one thing or something like that. I was working on another project for work that used this algorithm. I was like, well, I could do this for EDH decks because there's only one card. It's Highlander. So the algorithm worked pretty well. So I guess even if I was playing Standard, I couldn't have built a website about it for Standard because the algorithm wouldn't have worked for it. Mm-hmm. And also, too, the other thing about EDH that makes the algorithm work is that the format's eternal. So, you know, there's not things rotating out. Meta's not changing too quickly. So basically, it was a combination of me being an EDH player and then me looking at the problem and saying, hey, it isn't that hard. So that's kind of how I settled on EDH. And like I kind of said earlier, I didn't really dedicate a whole website to building EDH decks. I just kind of built a website that, you know, people have to start using. I was kind of using it myself. And the fact that other people use it is just kind of cool.
So how do you deal with Shadowborn Apostles and Relentless Rats?
I don't. So this is a major limitation of the website, I think. I'm lucky that those decks aren't super popular, but It definitely has problems. So if you try to build a Relentless Rats deck and you get like an average deck list, it'll only ever show that you should be playing one rat. And when I get those decks, it basically just treats it. I mean, it's not horrible because it'll see that you have Relentless Rats in your deck, and it'll still make recommendations like Throwing Stone and things like that because those two cards are paired together often, but it can't tell you like how many rats you should be playing or influence it. Like, there's obviously a difference between a deck that's playing 10 of them versus, you know, 40 of them. So that's definitely a big limitation to the algorithm, and I'm not going to like change the whole thing just because of rats and Shadowborn Apostles.
Okay.
Sorry.
Patron Robin Koss, many thanks to the site and all your hard work. I use it almost every day, and in your own words, I'm one of the EDH Rec hipsters, so I'll likely continue to use the site for research. One of the strengths of EDH as a format is creativity and diversity. Ask the players, and a lot of them will say that they play EDH because they enjoy the deck building. Do you ever fear that your site, to some extent, stifles the creativity of the format?
Ooh, good question.
Good question.
Yeah. So in particular, I remember when I first started EDH Rec and it was just a bot on Reddit. And I remember the first night that I kind of unleashed it on the server. You know, I didn't announce it or anything. I didn't actually think that anybody would even pay attention to it. And some of the recommendations, you know, early on were pretty bad, but some of them were pretty spot on. And I started getting some like doom and gloom people that were kind of like coming and commenting and saying like, you know, you should go kill yourself. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, people are really nasty about it. And
typical Reddit humanity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, and I've answered this question a couple times because I get the question. It's a fun, interesting question, and I'm not sure that I have a good answer. I think I do stifle creativity, but I think my answer is that I created in new places. So in a sense, like, the creativity that exists without EDHREC is really just knowledge of cards and thinking about how things work together. Like, if I was building a Nekazar deck, Nekazar is my example of a deck that builds itself, right? Like, it has a lot of cards, you know, it only has one really line of play. So in a way, I think EDHREC stifles creativity in building Nekazar decks because I'm really good at building decks that build themselves. So I think what I do, though, is I'm saving you time on building the cards that are obvious for Commander so that you can focus more on the more interesting choices, which is why I think that, which is why, you know, I can sleep at night, I guess. And so my answer is really, I think it stifles creativity in certain ways, but only in the obvious ways. And I think it lets people find more interesting things to focus on in their decks.
I would say that to the people that say it stifles creativity and are really sort of doom and gloom about it, do those people, same people, have a problem with Wizards printing the deck lists of all the top 8 decks at each yeah. Pro Tour?
Yeah.
Because that stifles creativity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think maybe some of the people that are particularly salty about it are ones that maybe came to EDH because they didn't like net decking and standard. And I think if you follow EDHREC to the T a little bit too much, that it is basically net decking. So I think if you don't like net decking, then you probably, you know, maybe don't like EDHREC for the similar reasons. And that's kind of an age old, you know, argument. And I think the same kind of points apply here.
All right. So I've seen a Reddit post where you talk about deck diversity rankings in context with the Gitrog monster was popular at the time. So you compared decks to each other and ranked them and on how similar they are to each other. And there's a whole list here. It's interesting, though, that Kaseto Orochi Archmage is the least diverse commander out there.
Yeah.
On the other end, Corona False God is the most diverse commander out there.
Yeah, so this one was fun analysis, and I brought this up because I thought that I was skeptical about Gitrog being interesting when everybody else was excited about it. So I kind of decided to be the Debbie Downer and explain why it wasn't going to be interesting, right? And I think I was right because Gitrog dipped when I was analyzing Moren. I decided to compare it against Gitrog, and Gitrog had some popularity early on, and then it kind of dipped in popularity. So I think Kaseto in this case is a little bit unfair because when I ran this analysis, it was not that long after they came out, you know, maybe, you know, several months afterwards. And I think a lot of the Kaseto decks are probably like modifications of the precon. So of course they're going to be, you know, similar. Also the fact that it supports a tribal theme, which I think that he has a lot of things going against him, right? He was a precon of recent time. Precon of recent time matters because, like, for example, Carador has been out for so long that a Carador decks don't look like the precon at all, right? There's been enough cards that have been printed and people don't have those laying around anymore. Meanwhile, Kaseto, you know, he was treated unfairly. The five-color commanders like Corona, they're just supporting different strategies, so I think they have, like, the opposite spectrum of unfair where, you know, you have, like, the five-color in general just has so much flexibility that it allows a lot of room.
Yeah, I noticed that Corona False God, Child of Alara, Chromat, and Progenitus are all among the 8 most diverse commanders. I looked for a tribal effect on 5 colors commanders, and it was unclear because General Tazri is the 15th least diverse commander, Sliver Overlord is the 27th least diverse commander, but Reaper King for Scarecrows is the 16th most diverse. And Atog for the Atogs is the 35th most diverse.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, I think Atog, you know, I'm not sure if everybody's playing that. Well, Atog, there's not that many, like, Atogs. So So, you know, you fill out your 12 and then you've got to, like, find another 80 cards. So, I think this analysis would have been more interesting if I just compared them by color identity, because I think individual color identities themselves have their own diversity. And I think, like, five color, for example, is naturally very diverse. So when you compare Togetog to the other five color decks, I think, you know, it's less interesting, I guess. But, you know, I think in general, like, the diversity rating is something that I want to eventually add to the website, because I personally, I think, like decks with low diversity scores. So, like, when I look at the kinds of commanders I like, I go to the bottom of this list with very low scores, meaning that they're very diverse. And those are the kinds of guys that I like. So I kind of wanted to know, based on looking at the commander on their page, like, oh, this is a very linear commander versus a non-linear commander. And then the other thing, too, that the diversity score can be used for as well is that if you submit a deck, I can kind of tell you, like, how different you are. I don't want to say creative, but how different you are from the norm, I guess, because I think a lot of the users, and me in some cases, like, try to strive to do something maybe a little bit different than what everybody else is doing. So I think overall, like, I was pretty happy with the meaning behind this number, and I hope to incorporate it a little bit more later.
Very cool. Yeah, Nate, that diversity analysis seems right up your alley. Have you spent a lot of time with it?
Nope.
All right.
So you have a new site revision that you're launching Thursday. I guess it's already launched since this note was written last week. Why revise the site?
Yeah, so there were a couple of features that I wanted to implement. So let me take a step back. So we recently released a beta of the current website. I was going to release it outright, but there were still a couple of problems with it and things we wanted to do, but I didn't want to wait any longer. So it's currently under beta.edhrec.com, and, you know, I'm hoping within the next month or so that we'll flip it over. But we got frustrated with the way that it was implemented behind the scenes, mostly around how many decks that I had, and the current infrastructure behind the scenes that I had implemented was really struggling with the amount of decks and analyzing that amount of decks in sort of some timely fashion. So effectively what we did was we completely rewrote the back end of the website, meaning the database that's storing the decks and the ways that we were analyzing the data and storing the data, to make it so that we could do the analysis over the decks in more real-time, quick time, and which I think will lead to a lot more interesting features. So our kind of strategy here was that we wanted to re-implement it and get back to the point where we had the features that we had before. And then after that, you know, now that we have this new base that's much healthier than the old base, we can do some more interesting things that I think we couldn't have done before. So that's why we rewrote it, was because there were some fundamental flaws in kind of the back end, and it was just time. So, yep.
Patron Mason Tally asks, any sneak peeks at new features?
you make them sound so sinister, Nate.
It definitely makes entering a little bit more fun. So
I know Mason. He does sound like
yeah,
that.
He does.
Yeah. So I'll kind of highlight a couple of the new features that are already on the beta site, which I think are fun. The first that I've gotten a lot of feedback on that people really liked, which maybe I was a little surprised that people liked this so much, but I particularly pulled out the cards that are printed in the most recent set out to the top in a new section called New Cards outside of Signature and Top. And I did that actually for a selfish reason, because the cards that are in new sets, the sample size is smaller, so you run into issues with those cards popping up to the top when they shouldn't. And so what I did was I just separated them out, which now no longer confuses them in the rest of the analysis, and also, too, just tells you, like, what cards are new. So we've been happy about that new feature. The other new thing that is a little bit hidden is that when you so there was this, like, really strange section when you plugged in a deck for recommendations, which was your unique cards that was down at the bottom. And what I decided to do, when you plug it in a deck for recommendation now, it actually prints out your entire deck list in the order in which the recommendation engine likes your deck cards. So the cards at the top are the cards that it thinks you should be playing, and the cards at the bottom are the ones that are you know, more unique. So that's another interesting feature. I think the next big thing that's going to be coming, I'm pretty sure, you know, I have to be a little bit careful about promising these things, but is the one thing that we don't like about the website right now is it feels very much like Wikipedia right now, meaning it has like, it's a reference, right? You go there, it has information, but there's at any one time, typically around 150 to 200 people using the website at any one time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And what I think the missed opportunity here is I want those 150, you don't realize that when you're using the website, you feel like you're all by yourself, right? And I think the big next step is trying to make it a little bit more social. So things like commenting on commanders, commenting on cards, rating cards, tagging cards, tagging a card as being, mean, or a card as fun, or a card as good, bad, things like that.
Oh, that is so welcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, not to compare, because already it's a little bit better, but the Gatherer website disabled comments over 2 years ago.
Yeah.
For no good or explicable reason.
Yep. Yep.
And so, yeah, we've been looking forward to
that. Yeah. And I think if it's specific to Commander in general, I think that would be fun too, because
I think it'd be a good place as well if people left comments on cards like Sundali Infinite. to just go and have conversations about stuff like that with people.
Yeah.
Confusing cards. It'd be a good place to have that forum.
Yeah, yeah. So,
outside of Reddit and TG Salvation.
Yep, yep. So I think that's like the big kind of thing that we're going to work on next. And the reason why that's such a big change for us is because right now we don't keep track of users. So there's no Notion of a user account. We don't have to store usernames and passwords and all that stuff. So that is going to be like the biggest foundational change. But then once we have that, we can start baking this in. And one of my main reasons for this, I think the coolest use case and for having this kind of information is that right now my data is kind of like, it doesn't have a human element to it, right? It's based on how many cards people are using. So for example, I want to have like a tag for a card that's the term I have in my head is salt inducing. So like I'm guessing cards like Armageddon and Death Cloud will get tagged with this, right? and the idea is that, and there's also fun cards. So maybe there's like Rites of Flourishing and Howling Mine or things that come to mind. And when you plug in a deck, I think I might be able to figure out like, oh, you're building a mean deck, or you're building a fun deck, right? So I think with human tagging of kind of like the feeling of the cards, I might be able to make more aggregate decisions. So for example, like when I'm looking at a commander, I could say like, hey, 90% of Feldegrift decks are built as fun. Maybe your definition of fun is different than mine, but there's a lot of cool things that I can do with a human element that we're not doing right now. And so that's the next big thing. There's some more incremental features that are coming here and there, but like that's the next big one.
Are you going to call the feature "Am I salty or not"?
Salty or not, like hot or not? That would be awesome.
Yeah, 1 to 10, 10 being most salty and most tear-inducing.
Yeah, yeah. I think that sounds good.
Yeah.
Complete periwinkle.
Yeah.
Patron Bjorn Christensen. Sometimes I use the build a deck option, but I feel like those lists never really fit me. So, any improvements on that planned?
Are you going to make it so your website makes decks for Bjarne Christensen?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, there is one particular improvement. So, one of the features that we're going to be working on is improving the advanced filters in particular. So the advanced filters is something that I think a lot of users get a lot of use out of. I wish it was a little bit easier to use, and I wish I had more features. And right now on the website, you cannot apply the advanced filters to the deck building thing. So what I'd like to get to the point where you apply in the advanced filters, like I want to have all Sidisi decks that do not have Mike Tri combo and do have Skull Clamp, and then it'll build the deck for you. So that's kind of the goal. So I think there is an improvement on that coming down along that comes with the improvements to the advanced filters.
And Nate, you use the advanced filters a lot, don't you?
Oh yeah, we can talk about that as my message of the week.
Oh, got it. Okay.
All right.
Also, Bjorn asks, I love tribes. So Any plans for something related to that?
Oh man, I've got something right up this guy's alley. So, and this is a feature that I have written down, but I don't know when I'm going to get to it. But it's definitely something I want to do eventually. And one of the cards that one of the commanders that really pisses me off from a data analysis standpoint is Olivia Voldaren. Hmm. And the reason for this is because she's pretty split down the middle in terms of like people that build her as a black-red, like, control-y kind of deck and a vampire tribal deck. So what happens is the aggregate stats between vampires and control get kind of muddied a little bit, and it's maybe not clear exactly, you know, what's going on. So the way you do this, if you were, like, looking for a non-vampire tribal Olivia deck, is you would go in the advanced filters, you would say, like, I don't want Stormkirk Captain and Vampire Nighthawk and a few other guys. And then you get the non-vampire tribal version of the deck, right? However, I already have in the website tribe detection. So if you go to tribes, you go to vampires, you see that I'm able to pull out tribe decks. So what I have currently planned is that when you look at the Olivia Voldaren deck page, it'll actually detect like what tribes have been built for that commander. So Olivia Voldaren, you'll see no tribe, and then you'll see vampires, and you can click on it, and it'll automatically take you to like the deck that is only Olivia Voldaren tribal vampires and only Olivia Voldaren not tribal vampires. And actually, we have the back end. It actually was easy to do from a data perspective. It's a kind of a bigger change to the website itself, the user interface. So, you know, it's something we'll get to eventually, but I think that'll really help the tribal people a little bit.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bjarne is going to like that.
Yeah. Do you guys have any, like, questions from you guys that you want to talk about or anything else in particular?
I can ask you a standard question we often ask and haven't asked for a while. So, listener and friend of the show at Nick Jaragrulski often asks, if you were stuck on a hostile plane and had to call for one planeswalker to help you escape, which one would you call on?
Oh, man. I'm like going through the list, like nope. like won't be Jace because he wouldn't actually do anything. Liliana's kind of mean.
Jace is off saving the professor of the Tavern Community College.
There you go. I think I don't know. Maybe a Johnny. Sure.
He is by far the most popular one. I might edit Nick's question to be
that's not a Johnny,
and you can't have a Johnny because we all love him.
How about, I mean, Sarkon's probably done the craziest stuff. Like he's definitely done things that I guess if I was in a true pickle, Sarkon has done the most in terms of time travel and other strange things. So if it was an easier situation, you know, maybe I could pick somebody a little bit more straightforward, but...
Be honest, Donald, you just want to ride a dragon, don't you?
Sure.
Imagining now you're putting on a long blonde wig, whispering up your Dothraki horde. Oh, yeah. Not everyone watches Game of Thrones, do
Commander they? Commander in After Dark.
Hey, Donald, just say to me, Dracarys.
It sounds a lot better coming from a British accent, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'll enjoy myself a nice periwinkle.
But, you know, we're close to, we're actually not close to, is what I meant to say, the Commander in After Dark goal on our Patreon page.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're like 40% of the way there. But
I feel when we do the After Dark episode, we need to get a female guest on so it isn't just three guys.
Well, there's a lot of beeping in that particular sentence. That's funny.
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah.
Now, you've said we a couple of times. This is definitely tangential.
See, turn in my pocket.
Is it just you or is it a team, a small team?
I probably should have brought this up in case my team member actually listens to this. He'll feel slighted, but he made it to the end here. So this redesign, I actually hired somebody to work with me on this, which was a big departure. So I took a chunk of money of my own money and invested in it. And so this guy, David Keats, who's been working on it with me, he's like a really good web developer, which is why the website also doesn't look as crappy as it did before on the beta. So he's helped me re-implement the front end and has helped me out a lot. And he's going to continue working on it for these new features that are coming up. So when I say we, I mean cool. Me and David. I'm working on some other collaborations, I think, that I'm not ready to disclose yet, but I'm definitely kind of trying to move out a little bit, especially around the social features and engaging some of the people in the community to help this out. So I think, you know, and also too, there's the set of people that I just talk to a lot. You know, I've got a list of people that I send stuff to if I need to test things. And so I don't know. We is like kind of vague, particularly me and David, but sometimes I mean more than that.
I'm used to the answer to that being the royal we.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I catch myself because computer science academic papers, it's customary to use we even if it's just you.
Well, nice work, David. I'm glad you and Donald have managed to get together to work on this. And Donald, I do notice that you're moving away from the traditional dark gamer look and moving toward a more open and airy look.
Nice.
Such as, for example, that enjoyed by Dexstats.net users. Just...
Hey, look, you don't understand.
I try to emulate the best.
You don't understand Tapped Out. I'm going to go and listen to Evanescence and think about self-harm now.
Don't forget Depeche Mode.
Get me, old man.
So, Donald, ages ago we talked about having you come on the show about 4 weeks after each set is released to kind of talk about the impact that set has had on the Commander meta. I think we'd like to give our listeners sort of a sneak peek of that by doing the same thing with Shadows over Innistrad, and then I guess the next time we'll talk to you is about 4 weeks after Conspiracy 2.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we'll see if we can do kind of a condensed segment of all of this data goodness, but just as it applies to the most recent set.
Well, is Eldritch Moon coming out before Conspiracy 2?
Oh, right, of course. It's Eldritch Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that set that's being spoiled right now.
Right as we speak, yeah.
Yeah.
So talking about the set impact is like one of my favorite things to do, and because that's like kind of exciting time for me to see how things shake up and so let's get into Shadows of Innistrad.
Sure.
The big thing that we need to talk about is Gitrog Monster. I think as soon as that got spoiled, pretty much everybody knew that that was going to be a popular commander. I predicted that it had a very linear form of play that I think is somewhat disruptible. It's not resilient like Moren is. So I think it's going to taper off. You know, I have a friend in my play group that has the deck and it's pretty fun. So I think it's going to continue to be popular, but it's never going to be like a Narset or anything that I think some people were saying it was going to be.
Right.
I think the other big one is, so the order of popularity of commanders is Gitrog and then Odric, then Sigarda, then Avacyn, and then Olivia. I think even if Odric and Sigarda are interesting, I think Avacyn is pretty interesting because Boros is just generally hurting for a good commander. And, you know, I think she's decent, aggressively costed. And I think that's why she might be more popular than I think maybe I kind of expected. Yeah, you know, I think we kind of talked about Giselle earlier, but I think she could become like one of the more popular Boros commanders. So I'm kind of watching her a little bit more than others. I was surprised at how well Odric did. You know, he's actually pretty pop. The commanders in Shadows of Innistrad, Gitrog Monster, Odric, Sigarda, and Avacyn in particular, are like pretty popular commanders. We had a couple of dry spells for a while in terms of actually good commanders coming out of a standard set. So, you know, I think Odric is going to continue to be like marginally popular, but not really ever that popular. And same with Sigarda. And Olivia, I think, is just going to drop off. And not get played very much. Just because it's just too, I don't know, strange.
She has a better older version as well.
Yeah,
she?
Yes, but yeah. Yeah. Black Red is very competitive. And so is green-white is competitive as well from a quality of commander perspective. So it's really hard for Wizards to come out with a new black-red commander that actually anybody cares about. I think Shadows of Innistrad had some really interesting cards printed in it, and the one in particular that stands out is Anguish Unmaking. That one is by far the most used card in the set across all decks, and there's not a good reason for it, too. Like, for example, I remember when Noyon Dar came out, the stats were skewed because there, a lot of people were building Noyon Dar decks. There's no black-white commander that got released in Shadows of Innistrad, and Anguish Unmaking is still really popular, so I think that goes to show how good that... I mean, that card is just really good. I mean, it's better than Vindicate, I think, and so that's been popular. What... Yeah.
Do you think it's being bought by people who wanted a Vindicate and couldn't afford a Vindicate and suddenly have access to something that's better and is it a standard?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's only at like a couple dollars. I think that's a really big point on the cost because Vindicate just cost prohibitive. And also, too, what was the one in cons that got printed? The one that cost 4 mana?
Utter End.
That was a popular card as well. So I guess they just wanted to keep printing that card over and over again. So yeah, that one's the one that stands out. The other cards that are kind of at the top, the one thing you notice if you look at the set page for Shadows of Innistrad, there's a lot of green at the top. So there's like a Cryptolith Rite, which is really good from a as each EDH player perspective. I really like that card a lot. And then there's just a bunch of green cards. So I'm not quite sure what happened there, but I guess they decided to give green a little bit of love. And then the one surprise... So Open the Armory, again, a tutor, I think is always going to perform well. Tamiyo's Journal is performing well, and I think it's just because it's like a bad mind's eye, I guess. It seems like kind of slow to me, but it's... really popular.
Even a bad mind's eye is still valuable.
I put the Tamiyo's Journal into Sidri because it gives me more artifacts.
Yeah. So I think there's a bunch of like weird niche cases. Like here, actually, I'm going to look at this. So
it's also in Charles's Riku Holmes deck, which has the win condition of what's the Hellkite? That's
Hellkite Tyrant.
Yeah, it wins the game if you have 20 or more artifacts in play.
you have to wait 19 turns. Like, yeah, when I'm looking at the card for Tamiyo's Journal, there's a good mix of draw commanders like Niv-Mizzet and artifact commanders like Duretti, which is kind of interesting. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, that card is a colorless card, that draw card, so it's going to see play in like Boros and other decks that want to draw cards that usually can't. So, in general, the dual lands did not perform very well in this set, in comparison to what I've seen in the past.
They didn't have those basic land types on them, did they?
No. And I think also, too, just having a plains or an island in your hand, for example, is like a tall order, I think, in EDH, especially when you're playing a really greedy mana base with a lot of non-basics. So I think that's why they're not performing well. But while usually in the set pages, when sets come out, the dual lands in that set are very close to the top, typically. These were not.
Yeah.
I think they were the wrong colors as well, because they're allied colors.
We don't need more of those.
The Oath BFZ block had allied colored jewels in it already that were still in standard. Yeah, weird.
Yeah. So the most popular blue card is it really Jace, Unraveler of Secrets?
Yeah. So speaking of Planeswalkers, Jace in particular, I think is a really good EDH card. Mm-hmm. Scrying one, then drawing a card. It feels like Mind Sculptor a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it has the same abilities for the most part. Like, scrying one and then drawing a card. I love, like, scrying and drawing in EDH just to soften, like, card draws a little bit, making sure I'm making land drops, things like that.
Right.
And then returning a creature to an owner's hand. I mean, like, returning a Prosh or something like that, prevent you from dying next turn is pretty good. So, I think... Yeah, I like Jace a lot, and I think it's going to be an auto-include in a lot of blue decks. The other Planeswalkers are doing better than I think Planeswalkers usually do. I think Sorin is, like, decent. Again, like, Sorin draws cards on his plus one, which I get, again, is, like, really good in EDH, especially in black-white. And then even Nahiri, right, is filtering cards, and it's not necessarily drawing me cards, but it also is exiling equipment or enchantment artifacts and creatures, which are, you know, pretty much always available to be exiled. So I think the planeswalkers in this set are actually, I think, some of the best commander planeswalkers designed from me personally perspective, but also they're performing better than planeswalkers usually do. Yeah. I don't know, maybe they're taking that into account now, but yeah.
Yeah, and then interestingly, well, I guess Westvale Abbey is technically a black card.
Yeah, it's the number two card.
But otherwise, we have to go all the way down some, 24th card is the first pure black card with Diagraph Colossus.
Yeah, and that's pretty much only good in zombie decks, which is one of the more popular tribes.
It's surprised me that Behold the Beyond hasn't been more popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put that card in your Meron deck. You'll see some power.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with you. One thing that is pretty interesting, and I think over time I'm going to get a little bit better at analyzing this, is I think there's deck cards that people figure out are good over time and cards that people figure out are bad over time. Like, for example, if you go back to Battle for Zendikar, I just picked a random set that in recent memory. First of all, the lands are up near the top, but like Hedron Archive is the number one. And I think people, that one was pretty high when it came out, but Green Warden of Marusa, the Eternal Witness kind of on steroids, that was not very popular when the set was released. I mean, it was close to the top, but it wasn't like the number two card. And Emeria Shepherd also was kind of towards the bottom, and it's near popped up to the top. So I think like over time, people like really start figuring out, okay, you know, this card is actually decent. And I think that one's going to stand the test of time, because with like Madness and discard strategies and reanimator strategies, I mean, that card's really good.
Yeah. I think unlike standard, EDH does not have the crucible, right, that drives people to solve the format as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And so cards will at first seem really good and then drop in popularity, and then something else will rise to the top.
Yeah, yeah.
As I say, I've heard on Behold the Beyond that, like, oh, seven mana is too much. I'm like, seven mana for two of your three win cons and win the game. How is that too much mana in our format?
Yeah.
So, like, the way I look at it is Behold the Beyond, like, if I played, and I am going to be playing this card in my Sadistic deck, I just haven't picked one up yet. Basically, at seven mana, right, I can discard some things into my graveyard that I then reanimate with a reanimate spell that I pull up that I'm tutoring, right? It's like, it's like so easy to get value from this card. And so I'll pick up a reanimate card, then I'll pick up Mike and Trike, you know, on the other side, right? So
there aren't many times I've resolved it and not won the following turn.
Yeah. Yep. And in mono black, I can make so much mana that I could probably cast those spells on that same turn. So,
and then the first mono red card is Burn from Within, and it's actually the 41st most popular card from the set.
Oh, man. Sometimes I think we should just like house rule that red is actually not a color in EDH.
But
I'm joking.
Then there'd only be three colors and...
Red gets such bad support from EDH. I think it's just hard, maybe from a design perspective, to get, you know, red cards to mean anything. But I mean, like, it's kind of silly that that's the number one card. I mean, who's actually playing that card? I don't know.
Mm.
So, and those are actually the only, in terms of the cards that are appeared at the top. Like, it's only that card. There's only three red cards on this list, even.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Because I cut it off at a certain point where, you know, there's a bunch of cards down here at the bottom that see no play. Yeah. So
normally there's a dragon that crops up, isn't there? There's a popular dragon, but there wasn't even a good dragon in that set.
No. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, dragons are always popular because they always end up in Kalia. Pretty much every... I had a Kalia deck for a while, and it was fun because every set there was something new for me. But... seems like, not so much this time.
Yeah, and Burn from Within is probably popular because it's the only, not the only, because it exiles the creature it destroys.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's still sorcery.
I know, but it zaps the indestructible and it exiles it when it kills it.
Yeah,
you burn out an Avacyn. If you're in mono reds, that's tricky to do.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the most popular green card you already mentioned is Cryptolith Rite, which is the fourth most popular card on the list. So,
Yeah, yeah. That. I mean, it's basically what the hell's that other card? I play it all the time. It's just late. The one that untaps lands.
Seaborn Muse.
No, the you tap a creature, untap a basic land. It's enchantment.
Oh, Earthcraft.
Earthcraft, right?
Earthcraft,
right,
yeah.
Right. And Earthcraft is an expensive card, so Cryptolith Right is not as good, but definitely more accessible.
All right. So. Well, thank you, Donald. This has been wonderful. That sort of data analysis really it tickles all of us in one way or another. And because we are old data hands, as it were. I don't know where I'm going with that. So
on that note.
Yeah, on that note, we look forward to talking to you again after Eldritch Moon. Four weeks after Eldritch Moon, so it'll be sometime in August that we get together. I actually have all of the dates, and if you're up for it, I'll send you the next date.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome.
Yeah,
we would love to have you. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Now, how can people get hold of you?
EDHREC on Twitter is one way. I have a Facebook page as well that I get notifications if you message me on there. There's also an email address on the website as well. So if you have something longer to write, I would suggest the email. And then I'm pretty responsive on Twitter and the Facebook page.
All right. And we'll include the email in our show notes as well as the link to the Facebook page. I did, by the way, at the very beginning of the show, I did sort of EDHREC stalk you on Facebook. and I said, please send us a friend request. Because the other thing is we are sending an open invitation to you to come test your favorite decks with our playtest group. All they right. would be.
I will have to do that.
Yeah, they would be so honored and also tickled to be able to play with you. And we were thinking at some point to just have an EDH rec night where you just generate a deck list.
Nice.
And then play that deck list blind just to see how it goes.
I like it. All right, I'll definitely join up. That sounds like fun.
All right, cool. Well, as always, our patrons have given us wonderful questions. And Donald, thank you for taking the time to answer them. It is almost the end of the show, which means that Nate has some sort of message of the week.
This week, my message of the week is using the advanced filters option on EDHREC.
Oh.
So when data like this is being aggregated across a mass of decks, diverse commanders in particular tend to show non-specific good stuff results, in my opinion, which might not be the specific approach I want for my deck. One method I use to find the pearls among the periwinkles is to use the advanced filter dropdown in the upper right of the page. Say I'm looking at Azuri Claw of Progress, who had around 300 decks the time I wrote this, and I only want to see data for decks that use an infect approach. So I open the advanced filters and I say, with Blighted Agent, for example, that cuts it down to about half the Azuri decks. Now, that's still too many non-infect cards are showing up in the results, presumably because Blighted Agent is generally too useful. So I get more specific in my choice of infect.
You pick a bad infect card.
Advanced filters with Corpse Cure. That narrows it down to a couple dozen decks. And it's much better results, as the creature base is now showing predominantly infectors. As a different example, say I find infinite combos distasteful. I open the advanced filters and I say, without Sage of Hours. And that narrows it down to about 80-some decks. Now, it's tough to see the difference in this case, but looking through the results, I noticed that the set without Sage of Hours also does not show Glen Alendra Archmage among the top creatures anymore. This perhaps shows that if I remove one card which is known to be degenerate, it might also remove other degenerate cards from the results, since those tend to be concentrated in degenerate decks that are built by degenerate players. Winky, smiley face, emoticon.
I think The couple of other examples that I personally do with advanced filters is So I typically am building decks on the higher end budgets. Like, you know, I have a, I think, a decent EDH collection. And like, what I'll do is I'll, in multicolor decks, I'll almost automatically put in the original dual lands in the filter, which basically brings up the average like budget of the deck quite significantly. Or I've seen people do the opposite as well, where you say, I don't want the dual lands, and that brings the budget down.
I suppose if you want to really bring the budget down, you'd say with Guild Gates.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of the plans for the advanced filter improvements are actually adding a budget filter. So, because I have card prices on the website, so I have a general idea of how much decks are worth. And so you could do like, you know, I want lower end of the budget or higher end of the budget. It's definitely something I can do. I just need to, you know, I just need to do it. I don't know, we talked a lot about what I could be doing, but I'm not.
Well, there are always more things to do and more things we want to do than we can actually do.
Yeah.
That's not a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Donald, we want to say thank you to all of our listeners. This is the time we do that. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. It's been a wonderful show, and if you want to let us know how wonderful it is, just go up to iTunes, give us a 5-star review, and of course, you can always come over to the Patreon page and donate a buck a show, or even more to us. That's very important this July, because we'll be awarding prize packs to our patrons. So please come by, and you too can be a patron of the show, exactly like Jason Hill, Cayman Walker, or Joshua L., last name withheld upon request. No, he didn't, but that's the way he was listed anyway. So come playtest your decks with us. And of course, if you're one of the $10 or higher donators, then you can help us plan our shows every week over on Facebook. Our theme song was created by Nate Burgess.
Yes.
Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto, who, as Sean pointed out last week, can be found at mrpicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly DeLuca, who can be found at tinyshinysquid.com. And special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and of course, always to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, which is, this is a surprise, commanderinmtg.com. Our email address is cast@commanderinmtg.com. You can find us on every single social media outlet, except the not cool ones, by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. And individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketjak, K-E-T-J-A-K.
I'm at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Donald, we have a tradition where we ask our guests to just say, and that's our show, or otherwise take us out. So, if you would, sir, take us out.
Take us out, and that's our show.
Awesome.
Mandarin. So, actually, hold on a second. I'm sorry. I have this freaking water fountain that just started behind me. Let me go turn it off.
I was just going to ask if someone was taking a bath.
Oh, sorry. I'm not meant to do that during record. Sorry.
Give me like 30 seconds to turn this damn thing off.
Sean, this is why we have the catheters.
Clip.